This is Central Time. The American Red Cross says it's seen the lowest number of people giving blood in the last 20 years, and as a result, it's facing an emergency blood shortage. This comes after they previously declared an emergency blood shortage this past September. And in 2022, the Red Cross declared a blood crisis as it faced its worst blood shortage in over a decade. They issued similar blood shortage notifications each year, dating back to at least 2016, sometimes multiple times a year. So how does our blood supply system work? Are there ways to avoid these periodic shortfalls? Our next guest researched the structural design and economics of the U.S. blood service industry and is here to help us understand how it works. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you donate blood? If so, what motivates you to give? Do you donate plasma at a for-profit outfit? If you don't donate blood, what would it take for you to give? If you're someone who relies on the blood industry, how are you affected by shortages? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Judson Edwards is dean of the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University. He's editor-in-chief of the Journal of Blood Service Economics. Judson, welcome to Central Time.
So happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, as I just mentioned, we've got another warning of a blood shortfall, a crisis. First of all, when we hear an announcement like that, how bad are things? Does that mean, hey, hospitals don't have blood they need to work with, or the pool is running pretty dry and we are not far from that position? How bad are things?
Yeah, I think the second is more accurate. I think they issue a lot of these warnings when they're starting to run particularly low on certain types of blood. And you know, the other thing I think is important for listeners to understand is there really is not a strategic reserve of blood. You know, it's almost just like we saw with the pandemic and a lot of manufacturers that you see today, it's really kind of a just-in-time inventory for the blood centers. And so, you know, I think that really adds to part of their constant request for, you know, more donors.
And it's weird to think of blood as an economic commodity, but in some ways it's helpful to do that. Can you talk about what's unique about blood that makes managing a supply difficult?
Well, it's really a complex issue. The first I would say is that people have to understand that a blood center, most of these are operating as a nonprofit entity. There's roughly 50 independent blood centers and, of course, the Red Cross. And the Red Cross is about 40% of the entire blood market, and with the independent blood centers comprising the other 60. You know, the, you know, altruistic approach to getting, you know, donors to come forward to make donations in order to keep the supply going, there's still cost associated with that blood. It all has to be tested. It has to be transported. There are all of these sophisticated contracts. It's not like a typical marketplace where prices change all the time. They're fixed long-range prices. And so the margins are very, very thin for these blood centers. And so what's happening is they continue to get more competitive. I think what happens in the case for people that are donating blood and don't quite understand what these impacts mean, you know, you end up with a marketplace where they're always operating on a very thin margin. And so, you know, they don't want to send out blood to have, you know, test run if they don't have to, because that's an expense that they carry. And there's no guarantee the hospital will take it. You know, most of the contracts that these blood centers have with hospitals are essentially on an as-needed basis. And so they can actually return units to the blood center based on a lot of these contracts. So it's a very complex issue. It goes against everything you think of in terms of a normal market transaction.
As weird as things are and as cobbled together as it feels, Judson, mostly, does the system work? Is blood and I guess plasma too there for the most part when we need it?
It is. You know, there's a struggle within, I think, the blood industry itself that, you know, there's this saying, there's no such thing as a little bit of government intervention. You have a whole group of these blood centers that want assistance from the government, but they don't necessarily want to have a government run system. And so blood centers had it really, I say blood centers had it pretty well during the COVID events, because they had the federal government essentially paying for all the units they would collect. And so they were pretty full with cash during the COVID-19 situation. But my understanding from what I hear from a lot of blood centers is where they had some, you know, kind of a cash reserve, that all of that is essentially gone away. And so, you know, it's one of those situations where I think people really need to understand, you know, they're doing very good for society in terms of making these donations, but there's a sophisticated business behind each unit of blood that I think is not commonly known.
A running debate that seems to crop up from time to time, Judson, is what are the benefits of a donation system? Shouldn't we just pay everybody who gives blood and that's going to solve any problems we have? How do we weigh the benefits of a donor system versus you just get paid when you donate blood or plasma?
Yeah, I think this just goes back to, you know, what we've done traditionally. We have some blood centers out there that they give, I consider it the same type of incentive as paying a donor. If they'll give you a gift card for making a blood donation or, you know, that is taking place, to me, that's almost as close to a cash payment as you can get. I do think, though, that we do have a little bit better educated populace out there that does see what's happening with these plasma centers and the amount of dollars that are being paid to donors through plasma. So, you know, I think this kind of voluntary system is pretty traditional for what we see. But I do think over time, the margins and what I would consider a strategic reserve for the blood system is something that these blood centers just cannot take on, you know, without compensation to do it.
And you bring up a distinction I really wanted to make, Judson. We have these plasma centers where you can go and get money for donating plasma. As I understand it, please correct me if I'm wrong, that's going to a whole different system than what we're talking about, the stuff that's going to end up, say, in hospitals providing treatment for people.
Right. And, you know, what a lot of people don't know is that the plasma industry in the U.S., we're the world's largest exporter of plasma. I mean, we supply, you know, Europe with most of their plasma for, you know, the development of pharmaceutical products. And so, you know, it's a big money industry, and they do extremely well. And so, you know, I do think that it's just a matter of time before the blood centers have to, you know, do more thinking about monetary incentives to keep donors. You know, the other thing, too, that's interesting is that, you know, there's only the O negative units are the ones that most of these blood centers and operations really, when I say beat up the donors for, you know, they really want the O neg donor to come out. But in many cases, these blood centers charge the same price for a hospital for an A positive unit as they do for an O negative unit. So in economic terms, you know, of course, when the more scarce an item is, you would think the higher the price, but that's not necessarily true when we talk about blood.
We're talking about the blood donation industry system in the United States with Judson Edwards. He's the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Blood Service Economics and dean of the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the current blood donation system in the United States? Are there ways you think it could be improved? How can we get more people to donate blood? Have you been a donor in your life? Are there things that would make you more or less likely to give blood and or plasma? Have you worked in the industry one way or another, collecting blood or using it in the healthcare system? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Judson Edwards, Dean of the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Blood Service Economics. We're talking about the blood donation system in the United States. Why organizations like the American Red Cross bring up regular blood shortages as they are currently. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Judson, I wanted to ask about the impact of the pandemic on blood donations. I think there's concern that a lot of people who might have been in the habit of donating blood got out of that habit. Case in point, me. I used to donate way more regularly. I've done it a couple times since the pandemic started, but I got out of that super regular donation system. Is this a big problem?
You know, I really don't believe so. I think what we saw during the pandemic, of course, there were lots of requests for donors during that time. And, you know, as I just mentioned earlier, I think a lot of that was because they could collect as many units as they wanted, and they were going to be compensated for those that they collected. So I'm not sure if, you know, where we were with the pandemic and where we are today, if that's something that we need to think about, some type of strategic blood reserve or however you want to phrase it. But the question will be, how will we pay for that?
Let's bring on a caller. Mike is with us in Ashland. Mike, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, I'm wondering, like 20 years ago when I was donating, they would check your blood pressure first. But recently I've tried to donate and they check your blood count. Has to do with your iron and that and anemia. And I guess they have this cutoff at 13 is the cutoff for donating. And last time I went, I had a 12.6 and was rejected. So I'm curious, if they're so desperate for donations, can't they drop that 13, you know, blood count down to 12 or something?
Mike, thanks for the call. As I understand it, Judson, that's for the donor's safety, making sure you've got that iron count.
That's correct. And I know that they're very sensitive to all of the different risks associated with drawing blood from donors. And so I do think that, would exactly as you said, that's one of those things where they're really trying to protect the donor.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. We heard from David via email. David says, I've given blood since I've been in college over 30 years ago. I'd be interested in what other countries do. So, that's interesting, Judson, comparing and contrast. Are there lessons to learn from other countries and their blood system?
There is. Strangely enough, I just came back from Vietnam and was studying the Vietnamese blood system. And one of the things that they've been really I think one of the strongest in the world is working with younger donors. They've been very, I think, sophisticated with the way they're using social media and the way that they're using some technologies very similar to supply chains, things that you would see like with FedEx and how they distribute blood through different donors across the country. And so there are some things I believe that we could do. But one of the advantages that they have in this case is they're, you know, it's a one single government run blood system, where here in the U.S., of course, as we've discussed, I mean, there's 50 independent blood centers roughly, and then the American Red Cross. So, you know, different systems, but I think there's still things we could learn from that system.
Now, you've mentioned a couple times the idea of a strategic blood reserve. Now, I know we have a strategic petroleum reserve in the United States. Petroleum keeps real good. You could just store it underground. What would be the challenges of keeping a blood stockpile in the United States?
Well, you know, the military has done it for years in terms of freezing platelets, that they've been able to do that. So there are some things you can do to extend the life of blood, but overall, you know, I think for us to have this strategic reserve, it could be done within our system now, but there are points within the donation system where it just really does not make any more sense for the blood centers to try to collect more. But rarely will they turn a donor away. So those are the kind of efficiencies that are built into the system that I think keep the margins where they are. But trying to maintain some storage capacity for blood is a very, you know, very complex issue. But, you know, you're seeing emerging technologies at this recent event that I went to in Washington, D.C. You know, there are people that are in the process now developing artificial blood for, you know, for emergency situations. And I mean, it's just amazing what's going on out there. But it would be a very expensive proposition, I think, just to have all of these units of blood sitting out there across the U.S. every day.
One particularly acute concern I've heard of, Judson, is when you have a major disaster affecting a wide area, you're A, disrupting the donation system, and B, you may have more demand because of injuries sustained during whatever that disaster might be. How do we manage that kind of acute, maybe regional blood crisis?
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting about our system that I do think should give us some confidence is for every disaster that you can name we've had, the blood system has been there to meet that need. Typically what happens is they may clear the shelves across some, you know, maybe bringing in and importing some blood from different areas. But usually, you know, the American people come out and support and give more blood during those times of crisis, and enables those areas that just, you know, kind of gave their supply over to where the emergency took place to build theirs back up. So it's a pretty resilient system as it is. And that's, you know, the real problems, I think, come with the testing. You know, there's a limited testing capacity here in the U.S. There are things like blood bags and just some of the normal things that are required to collect blood. We do not stockpile those. I think that would be perhaps an even better place to start than worrying about the blood itself.
Judson, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Judson Edwards, Dean of the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Blood Service Economics. He was with us today for a look at the blood donation system in the United States as the American Red Cross announces another blood shortage in the country. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, sex education can be a tough topic in normal times, and with schools under close scrutiny, it can be even more difficult. A Wisconsin researcher surveyed sex educators around the country for a firsthand look. We'll check out the results and what we're seeing in schools in Wisconsin and beyond. Plus, a lot of large-scale economic indicators look pretty good lately, but Americans have mixed feelings about the economy in major polls. Dig into some of the reasons behind that and share your confidence or lack of confidence in the American economy. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.